And then going into 2021, I don't know what happened, but our sales like literally just blew up, like double what we had done in any of the best months. And it's funny because the previous months we were like, there's no way we can get any busier. And then we did. And then it was at that point I was like, all right, like if this store is making this much money, you know, what if I had two of them? I could be making double the amount of money.
What's up, everybody? Armand here, back with another episode. Today's guest, we have Steven Shortino. Steven is the founder of iSmash, which is the largest rage room in the United States. So prior to starting this at when he was 21, he had no real world experience. He just kind of wanted to start a company, and how he landed upon rage rooms was a really funny story. Steven's really awesome. I really like talking to him. We have a lot of fun conversations. He's the first nut that I've met that also has his phone on grayscale. I do that, and people think I'm really weird for it, but it's really great to know that there's people like me out there. It's pretty awesome. So we talk about running the Rage Room, how he started getting offers to franchise. Basically, now they're opening one to two franchises a month. We talk about creating habits, how to make them towards you, how to not copy others' habits, but actually make them your own version. And yeah, it was a fun conversation. To everybody listening to the show right there, I want to talk to you. Yes, you. I know you exist. I know there's listeners there. I see the numbers. And I know it's not just my family, because they don't listen. But I don't know who you are. And I would really like to connect with a lot more of my listeners. So yeah, feel free to just shoot me an email, armand@playhardpodcast.com. Connect with me on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Insta. I can throw it in the notes, but I'll probably be the most responsive on LinkedIn. I'm not as responsive on those other two. But yeah, I would love to hear from you and what you got going on, what you're thinking about the show. All right, with that, without further ado, thanks for listening to this episode of the Play Hard Podcast.
Work hard, play hard. Work hard,
the name
play
of the company, hard, pretty easy, work iSmash.
Hard, that's,
dude,
work hard,
you have no idea how excited
hard.
I am to talk to someone who owns a rage room, because I've been hearing about these. But to hear of the master with the largest one in the U.S., that's exciting.
Yeah, definitely. It's been quite a journey to get there, too, and it's still going, so I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, so what... First of all, how is it that you know that it's the largest, and like, how did you get here? Because I know your story is really interesting, and we can just dive into the show. But how did this come to be?
Yeah, so basically, it started almost 6 years ago. I was at a bar with one of my friends, and he pulled up his phone. He's like, yo, you got to see this video, man. Like, these people are just smashing stuff inside of this room. And like it's a legit business. And I was like, what? So he showed me the video, and then he was like, hey man, he's like, we should start this in Rochester. Like, there's nothing like this around here at all. Like, it might do well. And at the time I was like, man, like that's ridiculous, like so out of pocket. There's no way anybody would go and do that. And then, you know, for some reason it just kind of piqued my curiosity. And I started, you know, just doing some like light research on it. And I was like, huh, like there's actually like, you know, maybe like 20 or 30 of these places open in the U.S. Like, you know, these guys, I guess, have to be making some kind of money if they're still afloat. And, you know, as I kept looking into it, I started to get more intrigued. And, you know, I was kind of at a point in my life where I was looking to do something on my own and have my own company. And I figured this was kind of a good opportunity that wasn't really all that crowded, you know, seemed like it was pretty simple, you know, as far as the business model goes. So that's kind of how it all started. And, you know, that was 2017. I initially began the journey of opening the company in 2018.
Nice. And I imagine New Yorkers, they got a lot of rage stored up. They got to smash stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I think especially with the way that the weather is here, and how often it's it's winter and cold and rainy, and everyone's miserable a lot of the time.
So what I'm like, I wonder, what is it that kind of sparked that bug of curiosity for you? Because you weren't really interested. You thought it was like, as all great ideas go, you thought it was a terrible idea at first.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of led you to be like, okay, like, maybe he's onto something?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be completely truthful. I mean, I didn't really believe in it a whole lot in the beginning anyways. I mean, it was really just, you know, I'm the kind of person, I like doing different things. I don't like doing what other people are doing. You know, I didn't want to, you know, start like a pizza shop or just something that like a market that was really saturated. So, yeah. I mean, honestly, the mentality that I was approaching this with was, okay, you know, I'm young, you know, I was, you know, 21 years old at the time. Let me get my feet wet in business. You know, if this place works out, great. If it doesn't, you know, I'll gain some experience and be able to carry that with me, you know,
nice.
As I get older.
So not only did you bring the fuck it mentality, but you were also like, this is a pretty good option to learn. Like, there's not a huge saturated market, so I'll be able to like have a lot of, I'll be able to get a lot of lessons in fast rather than having to deal with a bunch of competition.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that almost everybody around me was kind of like, oh, you know, cool idea. You know, he'll have it open for, you know, 6 to 12 months and it'll close and it'll be a good learning experience for him. And, you know, I guess I can touch a little bit on just kind of like, you know, how the opening went and just,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, I'd love to hear it.
You know, because I think it's a pretty interesting path of what had happened. So, you know, the friend who initially showed me the video of somebody smashing inside of a room, he was my partner early on. So him and I were in it together. And, you know, as the company started to get more serious, money was getting put in, you know, we kind of learned pretty quickly our disagreements were something we weren't going to be able to move past. So
yeah.
Unfortunately, we did end up parting ways, and it was me. You know, this was before we even had the store open. But, you know, I kept on with the company. I was already this far into it. I figured
out. Are you guys still friends?
Yeah, I would just see it out to the end. And, you know, like, when I say I had no idea what I was doing, I had not a clue what I was doing. I mean, I was like, you know, my father at the time, who was kind of advising me, was like, oh, you know, you got to go form your company. You know, you got to go to an attorney. And I was like, what do you mean form your company? Like, I was like that, you know, blinded and naive to things. And, you know, getting the store open as far as like the build out goes and just, you know, the marketing, it was just so sloppy. But I mean, hey, we did it. You know, we were able to get on the news. The reception was much better than I had thought. And we opened in October, so it was kind of going into winter, which was beneficial to us. Kind of having that weather pushes people to do activities more inside. So we sustained, you know, pretty decent business throughout that first, you know, winter into the spring. And then once summer hit, it really started to drop off. And that was kind of the point I was like, man, you know, is this going to be the end? You know, has everybody that's wanted to come here already came here? And, you know, it's pretty much dried out. And I remember it got to a point, you know, there was like maybe like $2,000 or $3,000 left in the bank account. And it was like mid-July, the store was straight dead. And I was like, man, like, you know, we're not going to make it another month. You know, I can't even pay the rent with this. And I was just like, you know what, dude, like, screw it. Like, you know, I can either go down fighting or I can go down, you know, and just give up and throw in the towel. So I was like, all right, man, like, whatever. Like, I'm already here anyways, just sitting here. There's no customers. Like, might as well take the time to learn something. So that's when I was like, well, you know, how do you get more people in the door? You know, okay, marketing. Okay, let's learn how to market. So I started watching a bunch of videos on Google Ads, Facebook Ads. I, you know, read a book on guerrilla marketing. So I started to just get feet on the ground, you know, hanging up flyers and handing out business cards at random places. And, you know, that really just propelled the business forward.
That's how do you get repeat customers to a smash room? Because I imagine that's a challenge you had to face. Correct me if I'm wrong, but getting people, you brought up a great point. It's like, has everyone who's been here already been here, and did they get their fill?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's actually, you know, that's a question that we get asked a lot. And, you know, our customer retention rate over a 12-month period is actually 18%, which is actually fairly good. So people that visit, you know, usually visit again within 12 months, 18% of them do.
Wow.
You know, I kind of like to compare it a lot to like an amusement park. you know, even if I go to like, you know, Cedar Point, I mean, it's really fun. You know, I had a great time, but am I going back the next week again? Probably not. But, you know, will I go back in 6 months with my friends? Probably. So that's usually what we see is, you know, somebody will come in with, you know, a significant other, a group of friends, and then they'll, you know, they'll come back for a birthday party. They'll come back with new friends. You know, we have other activities other than the smashing that they'll do. So, you know, we do a lot of promotions that incentivize people to come back in. So, you know, I'd say it's definitely a challenge, but it's gone over a lot better than I thought.
Yeah, dude, this sounds... So how many... You've been doing it about 6 years. It's been around. And we'll get into... I really like what you did, how you pivoted during COVID to keep everything alive.
Yeah.
But real quick for the listener, this is Steven Shortino. Now we're doing the intro. He's the founder of iSmash, which is the largest rage room in the U.S. And one thing I forgot to ask is, what are people smashing in there?
Yeah, so it's mainly glass and electronic items, most kind of like household stuff you see. So in terms of the glassware, you know, we're talking mugs, wine glasses, just plates. We do a lot of like beer bottles. The electronics, you know, it's VCRs, printers, speakers, phones, keyboards, alarm clocks, coffee makers. And then we do a lot of car windshields as well. That's a very popular add-on. You get to smash a full-size car windshield.
I remember once, this wasn't a true rage room, but we kind of turned it into one. When I was younger, it was like me and a group of friends. Someone's like dad owned a hotel, and in the back there was like this junkyard. And I think I was like, I had to have been like 11, maybe 10. And so the other kids, like I was the oldest one there taking care of the youngins. They were like 6 to 9 or something like that. And we went to the junkyard, and someone got the idea of like, there was a TV and we just started throwing rocks at it and breaking it. And then almost like a, like in this frenzy, we all just started breaking a bunch of shit all over. And naturally we got in a terrible amount of trouble, but God, was that fun. So yeah, that's another way of saying like, I want to try Rage Room. This sounds exciting.
No, it is. I mean, I think it's very euphoric. You know, it's kind of, I think a lot of the entertainment nowadays is really going towards that kind of like exciting, thrilling kind of thing. You know, a lot of places are doing that. And I think that's like one of the biggest value propositions that we provide to people that are looking for something to do is, you know, that the cost is fairly reasonable. You know, it's an exciting experience, and it's also very different. You know, something people haven't done before because the industry's so new.
I totally agree. I've noticed that this next group of, like Gen Z pretty much, aren't as interested in sitting in a bar and just talking. Like, they want to do stuff and have experiences and, like, go places. And the first time someone really opened my eyes on that is I had a friend on the show who he's starting the, what is it called? Like, open table of activities. I'm trying to like get it right what he does. He does like reservations for places like bowling alleys, for like Top Golf, for things like that. Open door. Is it open door or open table? What's the reservation?
So does he own like a reservation software platform?
Yeah, it's called Rex Reservations, and he does like that, what they do for restaurants. He does it for activity based things. So whether it be Top Golf, bowling alleys, things like that. And he was saying like one thing he notices, a lot of people just want to do more unique activities rather than just sit around at a bar and drink.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, when we have like franchise prospects and they're like, you know, hey, you know, what do you think about this industry as a whole, and you know, why should I, you know, buy an iSmash franchise and, you know, kind of go on this journey with you? And I think that, you know, I pay attention to this industry a lot. You know, I research competition, similar businesses, and it just really seems like with the digitization of the modern day world, people are looking to get out and do things more than they've ever been, just because, you know, so many people work on the computer all day, they're on their phones very often. So I think the experience market as a whole is on the upward trend, and there's actually statistics that show that. I actually think that we have pulled those statistics and placed them on our like pitch deck slide for people interested in the franchise opportunity. But I really think that this whole like experience market is not going away anytime soon. If anything, it's going to continue to grow over the years.
Totally agree. And now I do really want to get into you franchising, but before that, I guess, yeah, just walk me through like the story of iSmash itself, because I also want to hear what you did, how you got through COVID, how you've gotten to this point, because it sounds like first you were 21, had no idea what you were doing. Now you're running franchises. Like that's such an awesome leap. Walk me through that, how it went.
Yeah, so like I said, you know, 2019, which was our like first like full official year in business after we opened. We opened October 2018. So 2019 was the first full year. And like I said, summertime was really slow. I taught myself the marketing stuff. I kind of brought it back towards the end of summer. And we started, you know, sustaining again, even profiting, putting some money away for a rainy day. And then, you know, getting into the beginning of 2020, we really started to get busy. And, you know, we were having, like, you know, best sales months we've ever had, like double what we did before. And, you know, like when we had to close in March for COVID, that was like the busiest week we'd ever had sales wise. So that was definitely a big blow that we had to close down. You know, but at the time, you know, I knew that we had enough money in the bank account to where, you know, as long as we weren't closed for like, you know, maybe over a year, we would probably be fine. But COVID was actually interesting because I took the opportunity to kind of do something else on the side. I think it was probably like midway or probably the beginning of 2019. You know, the place was pretty busy. I made a post about it on Reddit, on the entrepreneur page. And I was basically like, hey, you know, I just started this rage room. You know, it's pretty successful. You know, I had 50 bookings in one weekend. Like, this is crazy. And the post like blew up on there. It was at the front of the entrepreneur page for a few days. And then like I was getting all these messages from people like, hey, I'm starting up a rage room. Any tips, any advice? Like, oh, hey, I have a smash room in Spokane, Washington. Like, any tips, you know? Then people are like, oh, you know, I'll pay you for consulting, whatever. But I didn't really have the time to kind of bark up the tree and just like go after these inquiries. So
yeah.
when COVID hit,
You had a rage room to run.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I was doing a little bit of it on the side, but, you know, like the post kind of, it stayed in the search results of Google. I think it's still probably like the third or fourth global result when you type in rage room on Google. The post is called Running a Very Successful Rage Room. So when COVID hit and we closed, I was like, oh my gosh, like this is the perfect opportunity to just write a course on how to start a smash room. And then I don't have to spend my time, you know, counseling people one-on-one and doing consulting. You know, I could just sell this course that has all the information in it. So that's pretty much what I did, is I spent the majority of time during COVID writing this course that was like 150 pages, basically told you how to start up a smash room. So, you know, we were closed for 3.5 months during COVID. And then once kind of the restrictions started to get lifted, you know, we were following along with the news. They were opening things in phases in New York. And I knew that our entertainment phase was coming up within like a month or so. And at the point, you know, I really just believed in the business. I felt very strongly about it. There was a lot of improvements that needed to be done that would require us to close. So I was basically like, well, I'm just going to rip the whole place down and just rebuild it, put a bunch more money in. Looking back now, I think it was a pretty reckless decision because it pretty much took all the money that I had in the bank account to demo the whole place and, you know, build it back up. You know, I upgraded a lot of like the equipment and the tech systems and whatever. So, I mean, we opened back from COVID. The reception was a lot better than I thought. I thought people were going to be a lot more apprehensive about going out and doing activity-based, you know, optional
stuff. People had a lot of rage at that time.
Yeah, I would agree. So the course did launch. We reopened in July. The course ended up launching in August. You know, it was pretty much successful from day one. And then, you know, I know going into the end of 2020, our sales were still pretty good. And then going into 2021, I don't know what happened, but our sales like literally just blew up. like double what we had done in any of the best months. And it's funny because the previous months we were like, there's no way we can get any busier. And then we did. And then it was at that point I was like, all right, like if this store is making this much money, you know, what if I had two of them? I could be making double the amount of money. So that's kind of when I started looking to Syracuse, New York. And I was actually able to partner with somebody out there, opened a store out there in the beginning of 2021 that's still open. So it was around this time when I was actually in the process of opening up Syracuse. I remember this so well. I got a phone call from, he actually called the store, and he was like, hey, I'm looking to start a Rage Room franchise. You know, would you be interested in partnering with me? And I had gotten so many partnership inquiries at this point that I didn't really think anything of it. And I didn't realize this guy didn't have a Rage Room. He was like from a development company that was looking to start a Rage Room. So that, you know, we started talking, you know, started talking deal terms. I met up with them in person, you know, him and his partner, and, you know, the rest of it's kind of in history. We, you know, it took like 6 months for that like merger to occur between the development company and iSmash. And, you know, we started franchising at the end of 2021, and we've sold 6 franchises since then.
Damn, dude.
Those have all come in the last 12 months. And, you know, we should close another, you know, 3 to 4 deals in the next 30 days or so. So
you're franchising like one every 2 months, just about?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, since the start of 2023, we've been averaging about 2 a month, or 1 to 2 a month franchise deals.
Nice. So you're going to get like 2023 is going to be like a lot more franchises. What do you expect to end the year at?
Probably 15 to 20. It's looking pretty likely.
Dude, how does that feel? That's sick.
Yeah, honestly, it's crazy because, you know, I'm still pretty young, and, you know, the fact that I'm kind of dealing with such, you know, serious implications and things about my business, it's like the landscape and my role, the business has changed so much just in the last couple of years, you know, just going from like running the store full time to now I'm like, you know, more administrative and support role, you know, not really cleaning up rooms and answering the phone at the store.
Yeah, I think, how old are you? Like, I'm guessing 26.
Yeah, 26, yep.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, that's, dude, do you ever, okay, so this is something that I have noticed, and I'm curious if you ever feel or notice the same, is that sometimes because of, you know, on paper, 26, still a long way to go, pretty young, you feel like people don't treat you as if you know what you know, or like they kind of brush things off. Like, do you ever feel like when working with older people, like maybe these development companies or anything like that, you just kind of get brushed off because of age?
Yeah, I think so, definitely in the beginning. A lot of people are like, you know, you've only been around for so long, how much could you possibly know? I think what I've found is that when people kind of talk to me and work with me, they understand the areas that I am very strong in, and, you know, I'm very forthcoming and honest about the parts that I don't understand or that, you know, I need help with. But yeah, I definitely see what you're saying. I think in the beginning when I partnered with the development company, the two guys running it were in their 40s, and it was definitely, you know, I know better, you know, you can't possibly know better. And for the most part, you know, I didn't. I took their lead on most things, but I can relate to where you're coming from in that aspect.
And so it sounds like one thing that you do is you're good at, like, when you don't know something, you're not going to pretend like you know it or try to brush or, like, beat around the bush or anything. You're just going to be like, yeah, could use some help there. Versus when you do know something, you're very confident about it and you just go for it.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely say so. I think I'm the kind of person that, you know, I like hiring people that are smarter than me to tell me how it needs to be done. And then, you know, I can just piggyback off their knowledge with what I know. Like, when it comes to, like, Rage Room specific stuff, you know, there are some people I take advice from, but, you know, most people are confident in deferring to me 100% on that. You know, I truthfully don't think that there is a single person on the planet that has worked more hours in this industry. Like, I don't even know if it's possible at this point.
Oh, that's awesome. This is a random Rage Room specific. What's your favorite smashing device? Like, do you use a bat? Do you use a rock? Like, are you beaten these things? Like, how? What's your favorite smashing thing?
So I would definitely say mine is the baseball bat, and I think that most people would agree with me on that. So the main tools in there are the baseball bat, the crowbar, the sledgehammer. The baseball bat's kind of just the most like versatile. You know, it's lightweight. Yeah. Kind of just throw it around.
It's like a hammer.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly.
You can use it everywhere. Everything's a nail.
Yeah.
What about, do you have golf clubs?
We do, but the problem with golf clubs is that the head of the golf club is only just on there with glue, so they come off very quickly. So it's almost like a, you know, a 1 or 2 time use.
Yeah.
Then you gotta just dispose of it.
Yeah, I imagine the crowbar is heavy and the sledgehammer is like a weird feel when you swing it. You know, because it's like the so much weight in one spot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like the crowbar is kind of like the in between tool. The sledgehammer is like heavy duty, but people do enjoy the sledgehammer, to be honest. You know, something that, you know, can kind of just annihilate anything within a couple swings just because it's so heavy is awesome.
A nice sledgehammer to the VCR. Ain't nothing like it. So how are you kind of like protecting people or keeping them safe? Because I imagine there's just broken glass, a bunch of like flying debris. How do you kind of keep the peace?
Yeah. So obviously the most dangerous of the three activities, the paint splatter, the axe throwing, and the smashing is the smash room. So people are covered head to toe in gear before they go in. They also watch a safety video, and the staff briefs them prior to that. We also have cameras inside of the room that are regularly monitored at the front desk.
Yeah.
So in terms of the actual gear itself, everybody is required to wear closed-toed shoes. No sandals, no Crocs, no flip-flops. And then they get a bodysuit. We actually, with COVID, our insurance allowed us to forego the bodysuit if people were wearing long sleeves and pants. So they can either do long sleeves and pants or a bodysuit. Then they have a face shield, just one of those kind of like, you know, almost like a welder's face shield. And then goggles and then gloves. So they really don't have much exposed skin inside of the room.
Head to toe.
Yeah. So we try to make sure that people are as safe as possible and, you know, following all the rules.
That's good. That's really important. That's how you get those repeat customers. No one wants to come back if they stub their toe on glass.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, Steven, now to talk a little bit more about you. One thing I noticed on your profile is that you're very focused on self-development.
Yeah.
What exactly does that mean, and like, what are the things you're doing to grow yourself?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, in the beginning of my, like, it's crazy how much like this whole like just starting a business process kind of like transformed me. Like, I'm a big believer in like when you have to force yourself to do things, that's when you see the most change. It's almost like when people go to the military, like they come back and they're almost like a different person. So when I first started this, you know, journey, you know, I wasn't really concerned about my health at all. You know, I didn't really take, you know, fitness seriously, mental health, you know, learning, any of that. But, you know, as I just started working more, I realized that all of these things kind of go hand in hand. And in order to level up one area of your life, you know, you can't just neglect others. And for me, I wanted to level up in business. It was probably like one of like the first like 5 or 10 books that I read. I think it was called The Miracle Morning. And he basically,
Hal Elrod
talks about how, like, you know, you can't expect to be like, you know, level 10 in one area of your life, but have another area of your life be level 1. And that's just, it's resonated with me so much. And
I think about that wheel a lot.
Yeah. So there's just been these moments in my life that, you know, I've learned those kinds of things. So as the business, you know, started to get more successful, and I started to kind of realize that, you know, the more that I improved myself, the more that the business would improve. So that's kind of why I really took a big leap in just, you know, physical health, mental health, you know, learning. You know, there's a lot of like, you know, daily routines that I do, things that I refrain from. You know, I'm constantly trying to learn and to optimize the best way to go about things for health and productivity. And, you know, sleep's been a big one that I've been getting into lately, how to optimize sleep. So, you know, from where I am now to where I was 5 years ago, I mean, I think that, you know, it's a pretty crazy transformation, all the things that I'm doing.
Dude, I totally agree. You've touched upon some pretty great things. Like, I think it is. Well, I'm a big believer that the business is an extension of the people leading it. Like, it just goes. The culture seeps through the people at the top. Just like the habit. I read this thing somewhere that was really interesting. A guest said this to me, actually. He said that people will often take some of your good habits and all of your bad habits. Like when you're the person at the top. Like your team will take some of your good habits, but all of your bad habits. So if you're constantly showing up late, that shows permission that other people are allowed to show up late. Things like that. And that's something that resonates with me is like the more you take care of yourself and the healthier you are, as an extension, the healthier your business is going to be because you have more time, you have more energy, you're in a better state of mind, you're treating people better. Like all these different tiny little things that you don't really think about that aren't really, you know, numbers related or bottom line, they do end up impacting the bottom line little by little.
Yeah. I mean, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. I mean, all businesses really are just people. I mean, everything in...
Yeah.
You know, everything is made up by people. Everything is run by people. So, I mean, I think that is a very accurate statement that, you know, the more that you improve, you know, yourself, you know, and I think that that's also a very good point is, you know, you kind of reflect onto all the people working underneath of you. Whereas, like you said, you know, if you're always late, you know, to everything, you know, everybody working below you is going to be like, okay, well, he's late, so obviously it's okay that I'm late. And that's kind of really like, you know, an example that I try to set is that, you know, I don't want anybody in my company to be working harder than me. You know, I want them to see like, oh my gosh, like,
baller.
You know, he's, you know, yeah, he owns the Rochester store, you know, it makes money. But, you know, he still works, you know, all day, every day where
yeah.
You know, he could probably just be sitting back and just collecting passive income from the business. So that's kind of like one of the things that I like to portray as like a business owner and as like a leader of the company is like, you know, just, you know, working for you, basically.
I love that, dude. Are you competing with the other franchises? Are you like, mine has to be top money bringing in and if it's not like you're just putting in more hours that's
yeah I mean I think it's inevitable that we're going to get passed up by some of the franchises that are in you know bigger markets bigger cities
bigger, yeah
you know we have like you know Tampa Long Island Houston Las Vegas I mean these are massive markets where Rochester
Dude,
New York
I gotta check out the Houston one
yeah Rochester New York is only 750,000 people in the entire county so you know you got Houston
yeah One thing I noticed is you said you have one in Syracuse, and I was immediately thinking, I mean, did you plan it to be in Syracuse, or did you just pick the city? But I, like, my guess is that because the college campus is there, you're going to get, like, a lot of not only, like, young people who are looking to do these rage rooms, but every year you get a whole new batch of people who have never been there and never done it. So it's like there's constantly more people being added into the market. Or not more, but, like, people who... like unique people who haven't done it before.
Yeah. I mean, the decision to go into Syracuse was basically Rochester is in between Buffalo and Syracuse. So I was going to choose one of those just because of the distance. Obviously the shorter I have to drive or travel, it's easier to manage the store. So just, there was a couple things swaying me more towards Syracuse. You know, there was more, in terms of like supplier relations that I had in place. So, I ultimately chose there. But, yeah, to your point, we do try to go after the Syracuse University market quite a bit because college kids, like you said, there's a new batch coming in every year, different
yeah.
people that have never been there.
So what kind of resonated with you with the Morning Miracle? Because I know what did it for me, but I'm curious, like what did you take from that book?
I definitely think that just starting off your day with, you know, productive mindfulness, you know, I know that he just, you know, his, it's honestly been probably 3 or 4 years since I read the book, but I just remembered how like, you know, simple his routine was where he didn't try to like overdo things, you know, it was very just like, you know, I'm going to journal, I'm going to move for a little bit. You know, I'm going to reflect and, you know, write down my goals for the day. So I've kind of taken that, you know, I have a little bit more of an intense morning routine. I mean, mine's almost like sacred at this point. I mean, you know, I almost don't do any work until that morning routine is done. But I would say that it was a game changer to just like get kind of like, okay, like, you know, this is what we're going to do every morning. You know, this is how we start the day. And, you know, then, you know, you don't have to worry about it, stress about doing it later. So
I'm with you on that, dude. What's your routine?
So I wake up, first thing I do is I go for a walk, get sunlight. That's something I probably just started to do a few months ago because I've heard that it really helps with your circadian rhythm and going to sleep at night. So I go for that morning walk. It's usually about 20 minutes. And then I come back, I exercise, either do cardio or weightlifting. After that is a cold shower. I'm sure you're probably familiar with cold exposure. That's been a big one that I have enjoyed. I actually stretch. I stretch before I dry myself off in the shower so I can kind of get my natural body heat to warm me up. I've heard that that's good. And then I do some meditation. I actually just started doing this breathing method by, you might know him, Wim Hof. I read his book,
yeah,
and I've started to do his breathing techniques, and you know,
that dude's unreal.
Yeah, it's like, crazy. Like, I just read his book, wow. And I'm just like, there's no way.
I know, dude. You think that, and then you see it's like a lot of times he's like recorded doing these incredible human feats, and like scientists are like, what the hell? What are you doing differently? But no, I had someone that I had met in San Diego has. He's like a big proponent of men's mental health, and he has this group where like every once in a while they'll meet up and do like, he has a, what is it called? Cold plunge. So some guy like teaches you how to do the Wim Hof method, and then you get in the cold plunge. That's sick. So yeah, I'm familiar with the two, and I will say, like, after the guy was like instructing us on like Wim Hof method of breathing, whatever, I caught myself like randomly smiling after, and I just felt so calm. It was the most unusual thing. I was like, I didn't know breathing could just take away so much.
Yeah, honestly, it's almost like addicting at this point. Like, you know, not getting the feeling of doing that cold exposure and that breathing is almost like you feel like something's missing from the day when you don't do that. So I do the breathing. You know, I do some reading in the morning. I usually try to read about 10 to 20 pages. Don't try to get too crazy. And then I practice another language. I've been doing that for almost 2 years now. And then I write down some gratitude things. And then I get to my computer, I eat a healthy meal, and I start the day. Usually takes about 2 hours to do that whole thing. But
yeah,
it's been a game changer, man. It really has. I mean, you know, you just got to be consistent with it. You know, even on, you know, the weekends, you know, you got to just get through it.
Do you have a modified version of your morning where it's like cut a little short in case something happens or like something gets in the way, you got to be there? Let's say you have to drive very early. Like, do you have a modified?
Yeah, version? I mean, basically, you know, everything will just get shortened. You know, I'll take a shorter route, you know, for exercise. You know, I'll just run a mile, you know, takes, you know, 10 minutes with the warm up, you know, shorter cold shower, shorter breathing. I mean, you know, if I really have to hustle, I could probably get it done in like 45, 50 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, there are instances where, you know, I almost can't do anything. You know, in those cases, I'll usually just take the morning walk, the shower, and the breathing, and then just go, to be honest. But,
dude, it sounds like you got this really dialed in. I respect the hell out of it, taking care of your health, taking care of your body. I mean, it's a big part of what I do, a big part of the show, and, yeah, it sounds like you're really nailing that part down.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, just anybody that, you know, listening, you know, this is like one of like the biggest incentives for becoming like a business owner and kind of just like making your own path is that you're not like constricted to this schedule every day. You know, you can make whatever schedule you want for the most part as a business owner. So I would say that that's like a huge proponent in being able to do something like this and, you know, really take care of, really take care of my health. Do you know, one thing that I saw this on Twitter probably like 3 or 4 months ago. And this guy was like, you know, put your phone on grayscale and it's so much less addicting. And I tried it like a few months ago and I, I'd like never go back. It's amazing.
Same. I have it on grayscale and everyone thinks I'm a fucking weirdo, but I don't care because have you ever, okay, I did the thing, you know how you can click three times on the lock button and the colors will come back?
I did not know
that.
There's
like a setting. There's a setting where you can do that. Cause sometimes it's like if I'm looking at photos or like if I'm doing something, I want to see the color. Dude. So look for that setting or like try this out where you turn the color back on. Because I'm so used to it being grayscale, the colors have this like juicy, addicting, like candy-like feel to them. There are few people who will understand what I'm saying because no one ever puts their phone on grayscale. Like, you've had it for months. Dude, look at a phone that's not on grayscale and the colors are unnatural. Like, they feel like they're sucking you in and it's just like... like the taste you get of a Jolly Rancher, how it's just like super sweet and you want more. Like that's how the colors feel. It's wild, dude. But yeah, I'm a big grayscale.
Yeah,
man.
I 100% agree because there are times where I have to switch mine back to like look at like a picture or like a, you know, do a FaceTime or something. And like it's crazy. Like when you go to your apps and you just look at how like colorful everything is, you're like, oh my god, it's crazy. Like how much less addicting it is though. On that grayscale, like
yes,
I just don't really like.
I'm
care
bored
as much.
Of my phone. Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's awesome, dude. I feel that. One thing, okay. Another thing that I really like about your morning routine, and I tell this to anyone who asks how to build a morning routine, or I don't know. It really bothers me when people copy other people's morning routines and then act surprised or upset or something where it's like, oh, this isn't working. Oh, this is like, I just don't feel good doing this routine or anything. Like, I'm a really big believer that it's good to have a starting point. So I did Hal Elrod's Miracle Morning for a while, but I realized certain parts of it just didn't fit well with me. Like, I just didn't click with it or attach. Like, I think it's really important to try out as many different like habits or routines or like different things and really try it out, like give it a week or so at a time to experience it and see if it feels right for you or not. It sounds like you've customized your morning routine to something that very much suits you and suits a purpose, which I feel I've done the same for my morning. So yeah, I think I tell anyone, like, customize your routine, make it true to you. Like, look at other people's to get ideas and inspiration, but never just copy paste onto yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that. And honestly, like, I subscribe to that thought process that you just described a lot, where you can't just take what other people are doing, like, oh, I'm going to do exactly what Elon Musk did and I'm going to get successful. Like, you know, and the way that I started kind of thinking about that was another book by the Shark, Damon John. It was called Rise and Grind. And basically, every chapter was about a different person. And all the things that they did to be successful. And I didn't really understand the point of the book until I got to the very end. And he was basically like, you know, everybody has different things that they do, that they use to get successful, things that they work, that work for them. You need to find what works for you and what doesn't. And I definitely agree with your point as well, that people see things and read things on the internet and they just try to copy them exactly. Like, oh, I need to be doing that, and then this will happen. Where it's got to be kind of more of like a trial and error thing. Where like, okay, you know, I like this. This worked. Like, I know, like, you know, someone like Elon Musk, he doesn't like exercising. So he just really doesn't exercise. He's like, you know, I just don't like doing it. You know, it's not something I like to do. You know, it's not like, oh, you know, you have to do all these things to get successful. You know, you need to just find out what works for you. You know, did what you did have a positive impact or a negative impact? I mean, that's really all you have to look at.
I really believe that for every example of you have to do this, there is an equally or more successful example of someone who just blatantly ignored that and reached the same end result.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree. I mean, I get a lot, you know, I'm definitely a lot more crazy about stuff than other people. Like for me, like, you know, I hate my phone. I mean, I hate how, you know, addictive phones are. I hate how addictive social media is. You know, I hate how I have to be on a lot of these platforms for my for my business.
Oh, I feel you, dude. And try promoting a podcast without social media. I've tried. You can't.
Yeah, it and it's like, work. You know, it's like, you know, what are you supposed to do? Am I supposed to leave my phone inside? Like, no, like there's people texting me and calling me a lot of the day. Like, I can't just, you know, forego my phone. I mean, I used to actually leave my phone inside, you know, for the last like 2 to 3 hours a day. I used to do that. But, you know, now things are just too crazy. I can't even.
You got franchises to run, baby. Can't do that.
Yeah, it's too crazy. You know, I can't even really do that anymore.
No, but I
really, like, you know what's crazy to me is like how, like, the less I use social media, it's like a very tangible impact on like how I feel just about, like, you know, myself and life in general. Like, I really just feel like social media is like the biggest like FOMO there's ever been. And it just makes people depressed. Like, people aren't concerned about being happy. They're concerned about being happier than other people. Like, that's like the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Is that person's happier than me. So it's making me depressed and unhappy.
Dude, yeah. I've had the app Instagram deleted on my phone for a while. And every once in a while, especially a lot lately, because I've been playing with a band, like, a lot of what we do is Instagram promotion or social media stuff. So I'll, like, re-download the app to go repost something or have a story or what have you. And I noticed when I first started re-downloading the app, it's kind of since gone away, which, you know, maybe saying something, maybe I'm back to being addicted. But when I would first re-download it, I noticed, like, physiologically, my heart rate would start to rise and I would start to get, like, this, like, really excited, nervous, like, butterfly almost feeling in my stomach. And, like, this is all from downloading an app. And I started questioning, like, why is this happening? What's going on? I realized it's because I don't use the app for so long. I have a bunch of notifications. And when I'm re-downloading it, I'm anticipating, like, it's almost like gambling, wondering what am I going to get? Which notifications? Who talked to me? Which one of my friends DM'd me and sent me memes? Like, what's going on in the world? And it was this really weird feeling of, like, I'm having a very powerful, like, physiological effect from downloading an app on my phone.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you said the magic words, the intermittent reward system. It's the most compelling reward system to get our minds to repeat an action. And that's the whole thing with social media. Every time you open it up, you don't know when that big dopamine hit's coming. You know, you don't know when that post is going to come up or that notification is going to come up. And, you know, you just can't wait to click on it. And, you know, credit to these companies, you know, they've played on it very well, but it's very addicting. And I think that, you know, for young people like myself that, you know, we've kind of grown up with social media, it makes people feel like, you know, everybody's getting rich. Everybody's got a hot girlfriend.
Yeah.
Everybody's traveling. Everybody's, you know, got a new car. When, like,
in some way, everybody is, like, better than me. That's kind of what it's, like, getting down to.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's almost like that with me where, like, you know, a lot of the stuff that I, you know, share or post on Instagram is about, like, you know, my business and stuff. And it's like, you know, people are like, oh, my God, like, you know, you have, like, the perfect life. Like, it seems like nothing goes wrong. But, like, people, like, don't know, like, at all, like, any of, like, the internal stuff going on as far as, like, the struggles go. That's why, like, you know, people show what they want to show on social media. And what they don't want you to know, you don't know. But the problem is our minds don't understand that. They just see all this stuff and they think, oh, wow, like, you know, I need to be doing this. I need to be doing that. And I think it's, you know, it's not a surprise how prevalent mental health issues have became, you know, even the last 10 or 20 years.
Yeah, dude. And you bring up a really good point. One that I've, like, spent a lot of time thinking of is, like, you and I both being 26, that means we were, like, specifically our age, 97, 96, 98. Like, we were the first ones to actually go through adolescence like at the height of social media starting.
Right.
Like I remember I got my first Facebook account in like fifth or sixth grade, and Facebook had just kind of started. Like it was maybe not just started, but it was like a fairly new to the public thing. And I just remember like I looked back, I think my mom recently was like showing me some old posts, and I was just blown away. I was like, how did I have this at 11 or 12? You know, like how, like I guess no one really understood the weight of this, but then I see like the level to which people treated each other, I would say maybe in like going into early high school, middle school, like it was the Wild West. There wasn't much restrictions on what you could say or post on someone's wall back then. Like they weren't really monitoring that much stuff. So it's, yeah, no, I've spent a lot of time being blown away at like, in some of the most formative years of my life, social media was also figuring it out.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like, makes a lot of sense why, like, I just like, yeah, my heart starts racing when I download Instagram. Like, this, that checks out.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly think social media, like when we first started, was much better than it is now. I mean, now it's kind of just like, you know, the way they have these feeds designed, it's like 90% of the time you're not even seeing posts from people that you follow. It's all just like reposts and suggested posts and blah, blah, blah. You know, as, you know, a man, as a male, you know, I think it does have, you know, a large impact, you know, the more I use it. But I think it actually does have a more significant impact on women and on females. Just because I don't know why this is, but like the last like 3 to 5 years, it's all about just like showing as much skin as you can as a woman. You know, booty pics, bikini pics, you know, like it's like it's just like it's almost like soft core like pornography is like what social media is turning into. And it's just,
well, Steven, that's because that's what people click like to.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, and that's the problem is that, you know, they post all these things and they're like, oh, well, this bikini picture literally got twice the amount of likes, so let me just keep posting that. And, you know, as somebody who has two sisters that are on social media a lot, like I know that, you know, the kind of impact that has, just seeing girls basically be like half naked all day. I mean, it seems like that's like the majority of what's being posted now from like influencers and just people that have a lot of following. So yeah, definitely just another negative impact of social media.
Yeah, it's just one big distraction.
So let me, I'm curious, you know, I see you have a bunch of books behind there. What are some of like, you know, your, you know, if you had like one or two books to recommend that I read, I'm just curious, like what your top picks are.
All right. Well, in that case, Steven, based on our conversation, or can I ask you a few questions first? Like, are you looking for a real recommendation or just off the top of my head, what are my favorites?
Yeah, just off the top of your head, you know, because I like people, you know, personally recommending something.
Yeah, I would say if not the most impactful book on my life has been Atomic Habits. I mean, I'm very, very habits driven. Miracle Morning was up there on that sense. But like, I mean, the show is about habits and hobbies. Like, I'm very much, I'm a big believer in the theory of like, your character is made up of the things you do. And your habits are kind of make up, whether conscious or unconscious, the things that you do. So in some way, shape, or form, they shape your character. Let's see.
Yeah, I've read Atomic Habits. Great book. I think probably one of the most important concepts from that book has been habit stacking. I think habit stacking is an amazing way to, you know, because once you kind of get going with one thing, it's almost like clockwork, like a routine where you just keep going.
Yes.
That's why I really enjoy. Yeah, Atomic Habits was a really good read. I also read The Power of Habit too.
I haven't read that one yet.
That kind of got more like on like the scientific level where they were referencing a lot of like studies and experiments that they had done on habit.
All right, so from a self-discovery standpoint, this one of the most impactful books I've read. It's called The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. Have you heard that
one? Yeah, I actually have it. I just haven't read it yet.
Dude, that book, That was another one where I think there was a time where I was really searching deep within, and this book just came at that right time, and something about it just resonated with me so much. It was one of those books where, like, I was reading it, and I was like, at the time, I don't fully, like, wholly understand what it is that I'm reading, but something with me connects so deeply that I feel it to be true.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think that I'll definitely put that one on my list now that you've recommended it.
Big fan.
I kind of want to talk about, you know, because this is something that I've been focusing on the last few months is dopamine and kind of regulating your dopamine to kind of optimize it almost in a way.
Are you a fan of old,
of what?
Of old Andy Huberman?
Oh, yeah, that was actually, I listened to his, that was actually kind of what put me on to, you know, getting kind of hardcore that, and I didn't actually even realize that I was practicing a lot of the things he had preached in that episode before even listening to it. But I found it very interesting, just, you know, the people that I know that are kind of lazier, they're a lot more apt to go towards these, like, very easy, high sources of dopamine. Whereas, like, myself, you know, now that I understand it a lot more, I try to limit those, you know, mass influxes of dopamine to kind of, you know, keep my baseline at a reasonable level. Because the problem is when you're partaking in all these very high dopamine activities, the activities that don't release as much dopamine seem less interesting, like working, exercising, learning, things that release dopamine on their own.
Things that require hard work,
But it's less dopamine, and your mind is always going to go towards what releases more. So I think just understanding that has been a huge thing for me. And just, like, you know, I don't really eat fast food. I try to stay away from sweets, from soda. You know, I don't really watch a whole lot of, like, TV or movies. So
what about caffeine?
Occasionally, but, you know, I'm kind of on the boat of, you know, I don't really want to get addicted to caffeine where I need it to get through my day. You know, it's kind of just like a here and there kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm working on that one right now. I'm still deep in caffeine. But one thing do you happen to have ADHD at all?
Yes, I do.
Okay, cuz I'm curious at how that relates to your, like, search of dopamine, because just for me personally, very much so. And in discovering, like, what is ADHD really, it's like an imbalance. Like, a lot of it is an imbalance of your dopamine. Like, I notice a lot of my impulsiveness and, like, the, just, like, the seeking of, like, my reckless seek of pleasure sometimes, I notice does come from, like, that imbalance of dopamine. And the days where, this is why Atomic Habits was so important to me, because the lesson that I still remember is the first decisions you make throughout your day will have, like, a big butterfly effect on your entire day. I noticed if I choose, you know, down the route of short-term pleasure in avoidance of the long-term more benefit decision, I'm more likely to do more things like that throughout my day if my very first decision isn't to wake up right when my alarm is on. Like, when I hear my alarm, if I hit snooze and go back to bed, I'm going back to bed consciously knowing that the rest of my day is going to be a bit more difficult than if I would have just woken up.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree with that. That's kind of why my morning is geared towards doing things you don't want to right when you wake up.
Exactly.
Doing things that are tough right when you wake up. And I 100% agree that, like, when the morning does not start off good, you know, I didn't, you know, get through my exercise like how I thought I should, or, you know, I didn't stay in the shower long enough, you know, it definitely does have an impact on the rest of the day of just, you know, I don't know, for some reason it just, like, lingers and you just keep thinking about it. It almost, like, sets the tone and sets the mood.
And you know what, Steven, this is something I've been working on, and I'll challenge you to do the same if you're not already, but is the practice of being kind to yourself if you don't. Like, that's something that's been really difficult for me. I notice, and I'm sure you can relate, just being someone who's like constantly learning, successful entrepreneur, like making, growing your business at an incredible rate. Like, I imagine you probably set a very high standard and bar for yourself. And sometimes that can manifest in a voice that's like, ah, you could have done better, or like, ah, you should have done it this way this morning. But to me, it's like, sometimes I will hit snooze. Maybe I didn't get as much sleep, and I do value sleep, so I'm gonna rest a little bit more in the morning. I'm just gonna tell myself, like, hey, this is the way it is. We're gonna let it go for now and keep going.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the general rule of thumb is, you know, if you were looking at yourself as like your best friend, you know, how would you talk to them? You know, you would not talk to your best friend a lot of the time how you talk to yourself.
Hey, dickhead.
Yeah, you know, like what the fuck, dude? Get up, you know, stop being a bitch, you know, you know what, yeah. whatever. But I think that, you know, that is something that I definitely have to work on, is being too hard on myself, and just, you know, ultra expectations all the time, I think is, you know, can be hurtful. But I think you do kind of need like the right amount of like push, you know. You don't want to just kind of be somebody that's like, oh, you know, that's all good, you know, whatever, you know, okay, you know, oh, we've been doing great. Like, you know, there's got to be some kind of like happy medium of like, you know, pushing yourself but not being too hard on yourself.
That's the balance, dude. For me, I'm trying to make it like, the balance that I'm trying to find is a leave it on the field mentality. Like, I never wake up. You don't go into a game trying to lose, but you're not going to win every game. So it's like, when you do lose, can you leave it on the field and focus on the next one, versus am I going to hold on to that, and is it going to affect my next performance?
Yeah, I mean, I think a really good way to go, like, to think about it is that, you know, it's to, you know, doing something, like even a little bit of something is better than nothing, you know.
Yeah,
even like, you know, agreed. Say you're just feeling really cruddy this morning, you don't want to exercise at all, you know, even just running a half a mile at like 6 miles an hour is better than doing nothing, just for like the almost like the mental win of like, okay,
yeah,
I only had 40% today, I gave it 40%, so realistically, you know, I gave it 100%. But
yeah, wow, that's a really good outlook.
I think that you got to just like not be careful to not like fall into that like thought habit all the time of like, you know, not performing up to your expectations is acceptable, you know, 100% of the time. Like I said, there's got to be like a fine line, you know.
Definitely. No, but you mentioned a really good point. It's that self-awareness of being like, where am I at today? Like, if you only have 40%, maybe 100% is possible, but that could probably lead to more burnout, or like more kind of like, if you haven't warmed up and your leg's a little sore and you go for a really hard sprint and you feel it's about to pull, like, are you really going to go for that second sprint? You could do it, but like, you run the risk of really making it so you can't run for the next few weeks. So maybe like being self-aware and saying, yeah, I'm at 40% today, let me just take it easy, knowing I'm not going to take it easy every day, but this is so that I can do more later.
Yeah, I think a couple other like general rules of thumb is, you know, missing one day of something is fine, but missing 2 days is when you're going to start to be in trouble.
Agreed.
Honestly, I'm a firm believer that I think consistency in anything is the hardest thing about life. I mean, you know, anybody can get really motivated for a couple of days and work their ass off, but to do that for, say, a couple of years, that's hard. You know, working on all those days where you just don't want to do anything, you know, you don't want to lift anything heavy, you know, you don't want to work on this project. I mean, those are really the days that count, and just kind of falling back on your discipline of like, okay, like, I'm not motivated, but this has to get done, and I'm just going to force myself to do it. And, you know, even if it's for 30 minutes, I'm just going to force myself to do it and get through it.
I totally agree. You know what I've noticed, though, is like, consistency is a lot easier when you really want the end result.
Yeah. Yeah, that.
Or like a lot. Sorry, what were you saying?
No, I mean, I think that is true. I know that, I think it was on one of Andrew Huberman's podcasts, is that when you focus too much on the end result, and not, you know, and you kind of just hate the process, you know, you're almost like setting yourself up for failure when it comes to like the reward system in your brain.
Yeah.
You kind of have to like find some way to work in a reward into the process that makes it more enjoyable. So it doesn't feel like,
no, that's a, I didn't know you said that, but that's a really good point. I noticed like with a lot of things that I don't like, but I try to keep doing. For example, I fucking love podcasting. I post every single week. It's awesome. I love talking and meeting new people. Editing, not my favorite thing in the world. But I try to find like enjoyable things of editing, or I try to find ways to make it easier. Just because it's one of those things where it's like, I'm going to have to do it. Like, if I want to keep doing something I really love, it's just a part of it. So I might as well make it enjoyable for me. Like, usually I like to go somewhere, like a coffee shop or something, sit down and do a lot of the editing, just because it's like more enjoyable for me to be in a different location.
Yeah. I mean, I think that just touching on self-development again, I mean, I think, when I first kind of started in my business journey, I mean, you know, I didn't take it seriously at all. I mean, I worked 70, 80 hours a week. I was like, you know, oh, stress doesn't get to me. No amount of work gets to me. You know, I always get through it. And then, you know, I did get burned out, and, you know, I almost kind of like imploded from the stress and not taking care of myself, and, you know, not taking care of my mental and physical well-being. And I definitely do take it a lot more serious, because I would always, you know, look at these things that were like, oh, you need relaxation, you know, you need to, you know, do this, you know, you need to take a step back sometimes. And, you know, me being, you know, 23, 24, I was like, oh, I don't need to do that. You know, I'm fine. You know, I'm invincible. But, you know, as I've kind of gotten further along in the journey, I've realized that's a flawed way of thinking, and you can't just go full speed all of the time. You know, you need to take time for yourself, and, you know, just do things to improve your health and not just work on your business 24/7.
I totally agree. Dude, people go their whole lives not ever coming to that realization, so respect.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's been a journey, and honestly, like, self-development, it's almost like fun. Like, I almost look at it as like a video game. Like, I'm like the main character that I'm controlling, and, you know, I'm doing all these things to improve the main character.
Yeah.
And it's like,
you know, that's a good way of looking at it. I definitely see it as like exploring yourself, getting to know yourself. Like, you're the only person you're with 100% of the time.
Yeah.
So you might as well get to know that person and get and actually enjoy being with them. You know, that's like my outlook on it.
Doesn't it feel so good when you like level up in some aspect of your life that you've been like neglecting for a while?
Yes.
Like, you just feel like, again, it almost feels like a video game where you just like leveled up this skill, and there's no one that's ever going to be able to take this skill away. Like, you're going to have this,
dude, that's
this
how
knowledge.
I had that feeling a week ago or 2 weeks ago, and it was just like, the word is elation. You just feel like you're on a cloud. Obviously you come right back down to earth real quick, but but I know exactly what you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah, like, no, I read this big long book on sleep because I had some bad sleeping habits, and completely changed my entire like perspective on sleep and just how much of an impact it has on everything to do with your health. I mean, it is the most important thing that you can do for your health by far. Better than diet, better than exercise, better than meditation, better than cold water. I mean, sleep, getting 7 hours of sleep a night is like magical, literally.
What's the book?
Why We Sleep. It's probably like...
Why We Sleep.
Yeah, definitely probably like the most popular book on sleep that, from what I've been hearing.
Sweet. All right, Steven, now it's time for the closing questions. Just to quick ones to get to know you before wrapping up. Are you ready?
Yeah, sure.
Sweet. All right, these are much more just casual, fun questions. Like, what kind of music do you listen to?
I've gone through a lot of different music eras in my life. I definitely seem to be a lot more on the country side of things as of right now. It seems like whenever summertime comes around and the good weather's coming, I find myself listening to country more and more. I do listen to some hip-hop occasionally, though. Usually when I'm like, you know, working out, I like hip-hop a little bit more.
Yeah, I've noticed I've got, like, when I lived on the East Coast, that's when I really got exposed to country. I lived in Boston for a little, and my friends who had boats on, like, Lake Winnipesaukee, that's what it is, they loved, like, for some reason, country to me is, like, 4th of July, summer, you're, like, on a boat, on a lake. Like, that's kind of how country feels for me. It's very, yeah, it's refreshing.
I just like it because it's positive.
It's not my go-to, but it's good, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, country's almost like hip-hop at this point, let's be real.
Dude, I'm pretty sure, like, the episode before this, I was just talking about the guests on how it's, like, very similar. And also, yeah, country's starting to use trap beats. Like, they'll use 808s for the bass and drums. I don't know why I said bass. 808's a drum. But they'll use, like, very trap, like, the hi-hats. It's, yeah, they have a lot of similar, like, pop country and pop rap have a lot of similar, like, production instruments.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, it's just really catchy, and for the most part, it's always positive, so that's kind of why.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've just kind of gone along with it.
What kind of movies or TV shows do you recommend? I know you're not a big avid watcher, but any favorite ones come to mind?
I definitely like ones that have to do with crime or things that are, like, supernatural. Like, I know I really enjoy, like, Black Mirror on Netflix, and I actually just watched one of the episodes for the new season the other day. So I kind of like stuff like that. And, you know, I like crime shows. You know, I watched, like, you know, Dexter and Prison Break. You know,
Prison Break is
sick. Yeah, Game of Thrones was a cool show. I really liked that show. I mean, I seem to really like, you know, crime and investigations and that kind of thing a lot.
What about what books are you reading right now? You're an avid reader.
Right now, I'm actually reading one on, it's actually another one kind of on habit, but it's more about, like, anxiety and stress. It's called Unwinding Anxiety, and it's about just, like, you know, your habit loops of how you kind of form these habit loops within your brain, and, you know, how your mind, you know, every habit that your mind, you know, has, or, you know, every action that you take, it's always, you know, there's a reward at the end, you know this because you read Atomic Habits, but it kind of gets a little bit more, like, granular on how to change these habits, you know, using mindfulness, kind of mapping out your thought processes to identify these habits. Because honestly, you know, a lot of habits you just do on autopilot. You know, you just grab that bag of chips, you just start eating it. You don't really think about, you know, why, you know, what caused you to want to eat those chips. You know, what reward you're getting, you know, how you're going to feel after. So it talks a lot about just kind of, like, how to map out those habits and use mindfulness to take a step back when you're kind of in the middle of those habits and asking yourself, you know, what do you get from this? You know, what's the reward? That kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good rec. I want to check it out.
Yeah, I'm also reading another one by David Goggins. I'm not sure if you know who he is. He had a really good book that I read called Can't Hurt Me, and then it's funny, I can't even remember the name of the book Never Finished, I think it is, that I'm reading by him. I'm also reading one by the Starbucks founder that's called Onward, that's pretty good. So I usually do my reading in the beginning of the day, but, you know, there's definitely a lot of times in the day where I'll just, you know, read a chapter here and there.
Onward, interesting. Okay. Oh, that sounds really okay. This sounds like just by looking at how Starbucks fought for its life without losing its soul.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it's, like, a very, like, branding oriented, and, like, how Starbucks, you know, kept their way while not while still growing to, like, this massive scale.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was pretty cool to just kind of listen to how this guy, you know, he doesn't really talk about, you know, I'm not that far into the book, maybe like 80 or 90 pages, but it's a lot about just kind of, like, you know, he was CEO, he stepped down as CEO, and then, you know, the company kind of started to slip, and he made the decision to, you know, he was still chairman of the board, so he made the decision to come back in as CEO. So he kind of talks about, you know, a lot of the changes they've done and how he came to go about that decision and, you know, why he did it, you know, yada, yada.
Makes sense. All right, last question. Where can people find you? Where can they go to the rage rooms? How can people get in contact?
Yeah, so I'd probably say for, like, professional inquiries, LinkedIn would be the best one. You know, you could just search my name, Steven Shortino. Should pop up, not too common of a name. Now, as far as business inquiries go, you know, if reaching out in regards to iSmash, you know, you can just go to our website, iSmashUSA.com. You know, typing in iSmash in the Google search will probably bring you right there. You know, if you're interested in, you know, booking an event, you know, interested in a franchise, anything like that, you know, all that can be submitted through our website.
Sweet. All right, Steven, thank you very much for coming on the show. It was awesome talking to you. I really like your mindsets and kind of outlook on life. I feel like we have very similar thoughts and whatnot.
This was a great conversation.
Yeah, we'll keep in touch, man. Thanks for coming
on. Yeah, thanks for having me, man. Have a good one.